Thank you very much. I see that we have a quorum and everyone is here. Let me explain. Oh, where's the agenda? Does the agenda have public comment right away? Okay. All right, I just wanted to let you know we're going to have a little small difference in the way we normally handle this meeting, because it's really just a special district meeting where we're going to be receiving a report from our consultants, CDM Smith. And what we'd like you to do is, if you can, pay attention to the presentation as it unfolds. And then there should be some speaker slips in the back, were there? Some slips of paper? Okay. We have slips of paper and pencils here. And the approach we're going to use today is, as you're going through the presentation, if something isn't clear, write it down on a note. You don't have to put your name on it. So you can ask a pretty simple question, or you can ask a more sophisticated question. We'll then have a break. That's why we have cookies in the back. After the presentation, we'll take a break. We'll gather the questions and put all like questions together, and we'll ask the consultant to clarify the responses to those questions. After that, then feel free to have public comment based upon the issues involved in this meeting, because it's a special meeting. Your public comment must be specific to the subject at hand, which is the report coming from CDM Smith. So let me run that by one more time. We'll have the consultant give the presentation. Then, during the presentation, but certainly after the presentation, turn in all of your questions. You don't have to put your name on them. We put a different question on each sheet if we can, so that we can pile them all together. We have like questions together. We'll ask the consultant to clarify those questions. We might not ask each one if there's a bunch that are very similar. And then following that, we'll have public comment. With that said, may I have the general manager introduce our consultant.
Thank you, President Berenger and CCSD board members. Today we have Mike Smith and Mara Garza-Bird from CDM Smith with us, and they're going to be reviewing the CCSD Emergency Water Supply Project, the basic modeling results, and this is Task Order 1. So I just wanted to clarify that Task Order 1 is complete. It came in on budget, on schedule. So with that, I'll turn it over to
present the results of all the hard work that has gone in from Mike Smith, who's here, who is a certified professional geologist here in the state of California. And Mike is one of the industry's leading hydrogeologists in the country. So certainly we put some strong resources on this, so we had a very solid scientific model. I'm an engineer. I am not a hydrogeologist. There we go. Okay. All right. Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to present to you our results on this very fast-paced, intense project for the emergency water project. Our agenda is going to be, introductions, which we did, objectives. We're going to talk about the objectives of what it was we were tasked to do, what we did to develop the model and calibrate it, and then what the optimized project is that we found as a result of the modeling. And then after that, as Jerry indicated, we'll have a break, write down the questions, we'll do the question and answers, and then public comment. Okay. Okay, thank you. Next slide, please. So in the steps for the model development, there we go. Okay. So the objectives of what we were asked to do by the district was to identify, develop, and be able to implement an emergency water supply project for Cambria. The intent is to utilize brackish water from the lower San Simeon Creek Basin in advanced treatment and using in conjunction with the use of advanced water treatment to deal with the extreme drought conditions. This will use an advanced treatment technology that meets very stringent California Department. And, of course, it needs to be implemented quickly. So that is what we were tasked to do by Cambria. The modeling approach, so the very first step was build a model. So we had to collect data from existing data, and then we also had to collect some new data during that time to build the model. And the reason we needed this data was when we build the model, we needed to simulate various systems, not just a little bit, but a pretty significant complex system. Recharge of the aquifer, we need to simulate that. Simulate the impacts of the surface water recharge effects to the aquifer, because there is some impacts of that. Simulate the impacts to and from the freshwater lagoons. Simulate the impacts from the ocean, because the ocean's very close. We don't want to bring in any ocean water and mess things up. Simulate the impacts to and from the groundwater pumping from the wells, from adjacent irrigation areas, as well as municipal use. We want to make sure we protect the existing supply. So there was a lot we needed to simulate in this model in a very short time. Whoops. The data, sorry, I'll get the hang of this. The data used to build the model, we had well data. There's records, record level, water level records that have been kept for a long time that was used. Boring data, so we could understand the soils and where the rock was and throughout the whole aquifer. Precipitation, so we understood rainfall events. USGS survey data, we actually had a surveyor go out and take some updated survey elevations, and some water quality profiling, so we could understand what that water looks like down there to help answer some of the questions the Department of Health had. Then we needed to calibrate the model. After we had all this data in the model and it was built, we needed to make sure that it was simulating the system as it actually behaves. So we went through a calibration process. And after the calibration process, we then came up with an optimized solution that balances the community's needs for water, protection of the environment, as well as the best water quality possible. It balances all of those things, the optimized solution. So to appreciate the model and what we simulated so that we could understand the full impacts, what you see there in blue is the whole area that we simulated in the model. Now, the project area where we're looking at doing work or working data, then to make sure that the model was calibrated and was simulating what's happening out there. The results are, so the straight blue 45-degree line, going straight up, that is the actual data. That represents all the actual combined data from all the various sources that we built into the model, and all the dots show what our model predicted on the various data points. This is kind of a unifying graphic that pulls together lots of different data, and we could see the accuracy of the model from a big picture perspective. So you can see it's all very close to that line. So the model was calibrating very accurately. Now, to show specifically one example of a specific calibration point, we have here an example of a well near the freshwater lagoon, well 16D1. And you can see the blue dots are the actual, that's the actual data that was in there, the actual well data. And the orange dots are the modeled data. So you can see with that individual well that is very close on that individual well. We've got a lot more wells, and I don't want to take up all your time going through 20 different graphics that show very similar things to this, but we do have that information. And we did go through that. This is an example of one specific data point that is simulated in here for all the different data points that were compared in the calibration. So the good news is the model calibrated. We felt confident that the model was simulating the environment necessary. So once we felt confident it was simulating everything, then we needed to come up with the best approach to what's the best, how do we put in a brackish well and not impact things negatively, and how do we help the environment? So then we began running various scenarios in the model to arrive at what is our optimized recommendation. Specifically, it's a supply well that consists of a combination, as I said earlier, of brackish groundwater, which is basically diluted salt water. It's not as salty as ocean water, but it is still higher in salt content than typical fresh water. Then it does have some fresh groundwater in it, and it does also be a new advanced water treatment plant. It's reverse osmosis, and it is the highest treatment that you can do to remove as many contaminants as possible. There will be a new groundwater injection well where after it comes out of that treatment plant, we'll pull the water out of the ground, treat it, then we will inject it back into the aquifer, and then your existing water supply wells will be used to pull fresh water out of the aquifer from where you're pulling it now to go back into the system. That highly treated water from that well will be helping to refresh the aquifer with additional water, recharge the aquifer. We'll need to convert an existing reservoir into a lined evaporation pond, because when you treat this water, the salt and everything that's removed through the membrane treatment process needs to go somewhere. So it goes into, it's a wet salt, and it goes into an evaporation pond. It dries out, and it gets hauled off. And then there will be some new pipelines to move this water around as necessary. They aren't very long. So specifically, the benefits. Some of the benefits we found in our model as we were looking at the various scenarios is, well, this obviously provides a sustainable supply in a drought. That's the good news. It's drought tolerant. It's a drought protected supply. But more notably, it prevents saltwater intrusion in freshwater supply. Some of our scenarios showed that in an extreme drought situation, actually those percolation ponds may not be able to protect saltwater intrusion under extreme drought conditions completely. So it protects in those drought conditions because you're recharging the aquifer with that freshwater. Those percolation ponds that are keeping that saltwater intrusion out, it keeps them from migrating back towards the freshwater wells in an extreme drought situation. So there's some real benefits here to protect your existing supply of water. And it provides water to help protect some riparian habitat in the freshwater lagoon area. So because there is enough water that we're going to produce to also use for that during the drought conditions to protect that riparian habitat. So the project, if I can get to the next slide. Come on, it was working. What? A new supply well and pipe it in over here, treat it on the property where the percolation ponds, put the advanced water treatment plant there, then pump it up to this area up here and inject it in the aquifer up here. There will be a monitoring well that goes in right here to monitor this aquifer and the water, so we always know what's going on with that water and the quality of that water, so we can make sure that it is truly only freshwater aquifer and the highly treated water, nothing else. So that way it's always monitored. And then you'll pump out as normal from some combination of these three wells for your water supply, as you currently do now. So that, and then it goes into your existing distribution system and your existing infrastructure. So it is a nice solution that minimizes the amount of infrastructure necessary because it ties in with your existing system. It is a minimal footprint on existing district property. and it also will help to protect the environment. So it is a nice, it is a very nice balance of all the needs that need to be met with this project, and it can be executed relatively quickly. So that, it tells you, that gives you a very brief update of what all the work that went into task order one that we did. The next steps will be to develop. Now we know what works. We know what will work. Now we need to figure out, okay, how long will it take to do this specifically? We've had a few meetings with some permitting agencies, and we got to figure out how much it costs, of course. I mean, specifically as we get into the details, because the permitting agencies have a lot of opinions about how things should be done. And then we need to complete the environmental process of this, and of course complete the permitting process. So those are the specific next steps that we're talking to the district about.
Mara, could you back up one and re-go over the actual facility? Sorry, I think you missed the evaporation pond and the treatment plant.
Thank you. So the treatment plant, is right here. This is the treatment plant. This advanced water treatment plant will be right there. And then water from the advanced water treatment plant will then be piped up here, injected into the aquifer. So it'll be put back into the aquifer. And then you'll just continue pumping out with your existing some combination of your existing supply wells, which we're trying to figure that out. That's the next steps of part of the modeling as well, is figuring out, you know, once you're injecting, to make sure you maximize the time that this water mixes in with all the other fresh water. You know, we want to figure out the right combination of using these wells. Is that it?
Okay. Well, good. If we're ready now for a quick break, this, if you were listening to the presentation and you have some specific questions, just write them down. Maybe some people got here a little bit late. We're going to write down our questions. No need to put your name on them. We'll reconvene in 10 minutes and ask those questions. So at 4:35, we'll reconvene. Let me explain. We've got a lot of questions, and a lot of them are the same. So what we're going to have is Myra's going to start with what we've classified as A, and that, and also after we're done with this question and the answer period, we'll bring it back to the board if the board has any questions or answers, and then we'll have public comment. But the public comment must be on this particular project because it.
Well, first of all, I have to make a correction from my past presentation. We ran so many scenarios, and I knew what to present, and I just got upside down when I looked at the graphic with everybody sitting staring at me. So let me correct myself on something that I said. When I said this is the new supply well, that's not correct. An existing well out on the district's property is going to be used for the supply of the water and piped here and treated. This water, this is going to be a shallow injection well that's used to protect the riparian habitat to maintain water in the freshwater lagoon. So that is what I said incorrectly. So we're using an existing well that's out there for the supply, and then we're going to put in a new shallow well to help keep water to protect the environment. So I apologize. At one point, somewhere in this whole process, we had a well over here, and I just went right back to that. So I apologize. Okay. So to start with the questions, but I'll read them aloud and then decide who will answer it. So first question is, what alternatives to brackish water desalinization were considered? And the second question is similar, and it's, why was CDM Smith only directed to analyze brackish water treatment? And so I'm going to, Bob, do you want to address that? Because it's very similar questions.
Sure. What I have in front of me, just so people know what I'm looking at, back in 2012, we did a series of public workshops on alternatives that screened it. And this is actually a report that CDM Smith did for the Army Corps of Engineers through that contract at the time. And it is posted on the CCSD website for anybody who wants to look at it. It's a November 27, 2013 engineering technical memo on water supply alternatives. And chapter 4 of that report summarizes the 4 public meetings that were held in 2012 where we had a facilitator and we went through the cost and some of the different features of each supply alternative. So if you want a good reference on comparing alternatives, that's one to turn to. Now, as far as the cost, the next task order that CDM Smith is working on is going to look at the cost question in much greater detail. What we have done so far is we've simplified what was called the San Simeon Creek Road brackish water alternative in this earlier engineering tech memo a great deal. So we've taken a lot of the infrastructure out of that. So we've lowered that cost substantially. We don't have an exact. Some of the other alternatives, we knew you, either because of cost or because of permitting environmental issues, this would be the probably the most efficient and effective way to get an emergency water supply online. Some of the past ones that were looked at was a seawater RO plant that had some facilities like horizontal wells going off of Shamel Park. We had a shared facility with Morro Bay. There was some various variations on that. Whale Rock Reservoir. There was off-stream storage. There was hard rock storage. There was trying to maybe use some of the recycled water from San Simeon CSD. So there was a number of alternatives, and those are some of the ones that were screened down. There was even more beyond that. So those are the basic ones that was looked at. So.
Okay. Thank you. Has this Tier 1 report, and I think they mean the Task Order 1 that we just completed, added anything at all to the description in the memorandum of November 27, 2013? If so, what? And so Mike Smith has been involved in both phases of this, and this is the memorandum that you're referring to that's up on the district's website, tech memo from November 27th. And Mike, you want to talk about what we did in addition?
Sure. A lot of the work that was was documented in the 2012 report was based on summaries from some of the USGS work in the late 1980s reported in the 1998 report. The updates that were done for this put together a model that really incorporated all of the available information and refined things very substantially from what was used in the 2012 report.
So basically, would you say a lot more detail went into this model?
Yeah, a lot more detail.
Okay. So a lot more
building on the USGS work.
Right. So the first memorandum that the Corps of Engineers did, that started out at 100,000 foot level. We've now gone to ground level as far as level of detail, because that looked at a ton of different things and screened them to figure out what made most sense and narrowed down and narrowed down. It did not focus in on one focused area, and so now we've gone into a lot of detail. And that's the difference with this task order, because we had not done that prior.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. So someone's handed a piece of paper from the memorandum I believe, from November. And it says, see, selected for implementation, a detailed analysis of the interrelationship between the secondary effluent percolation, the brackish water extraction, the downstream San Simeon Creek lagoons, and the potable water recharge injection and extraction must be performed. So this is very similar to the previous question, because that is exactly what we did in this task order. That is what we presented to you today was the hydrogeologic modeling that was done to determine all those interrelationships between all of those. So yes, that has been done, and the results were presented today.
Okay. So how much of each of those waters did you have?
I think we were supposed to be writing. We'll talk. We have some of those questions.
The question was results. It said, what were the results?
Well, okay. So we have some questions asking that. And we'll get to those when they're specifically asked. I didn't interpret that question that way. So thank you, though. But we will answer that specifically. We do have those results. So, all right, next question. They've taken another sheet of paper from that memorandum here. And it says, QP on attached sheet, why is this assumption made rather than relying on existing data or data newly gathered? And what they're talking about, I believe, the third three asterisks I see on this table. And there's a table in this report that says the system flows and allocations, built out conditions with 4,650 service connections. It says it is assumed that the native, and what is this? Let me look at where the three asterisks are related, but where did we, here it is. On the native aquifer recharge, it says it is assumed that the native water aquifer recharge will always be equal to or larger than the existing portable water extraction allocation for dry season from May 1st through October 31st. So that assumption was made for that very big picture report, and that is not what was done for this task order, right? You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that assumption that was in the 2012 report was based on looking at historic data where when the basin refills with the stream recharge, it pretty much resets the basin each year. And what we did in the modeling is we're incorporating.
And that was the one that the estimated
the next
cost.
One.
So if we can get all the A's out of the way real quick.
Next.
Not real quick.
Sure.
Take as much time as we need. But.
So the next one is, what will this cost? So those are part of our next steps, is to figure out what this is going to cost, as I put on the slide. So I'm very hesitant to throw any numbers out there right now. We do have some ballpark figures, but very reluctant to put them out there until we understand some specific requirements that may be required from the permitting agencies that could impact some of those costs. So until we understand those things, Jerry or Bob, would you like to expand on the cost question?
I could probably give a rough range and hang myself in the process, but I will, because I know there's a lot of questions and I'm used to getting hung in the process. My rough estimate right now is in the $4 million range. And that could be give or take, you know, plus or minus $1 million, possibly in a range. So $3 to $5 million would not be out of the question at this point. But Mari's right. There's a number of permitting questions that have to be answered yet that could influence the cost. depending on what we run into in the next task order. And again, there'll be the whole cost question is going to be studied in detail, as now that we have the modeling with the recommended plan, so we can go forward with the next task order two, which CDM Smith is just now getting into, and we'll be digging into the cost question much further and much more accurately than that.
Yes.
But I think when task order three is completed, or at least a good portion of it is underway, I think that convening another one of these type workshop environments to keep the public up to speed on what's going on, and so not necessarily waiting till that task order is done in its entirety, but keeping just everybody informed on
right.
what's going on would be a good
Correct.
Idea.
Yeah. Okay. Next question, why not get available grant money to treat the wastewater at the wastewater plant? Bob, do you want to talk about treating the wastewater plant and available grant money?
I'm sorry, repeat the question.
Why not get available grant money to treat the wastewater at the wastewater plant?
Well, we're always open to getting outside grant money. We're continuing to pursue any avenue we can. Now, whether specific to the we're responding to their questions to make sure we get accurate information into the integrated regional water management plan. Some time ago, the district became a signatory to the MOU on that plan with the thought that we could get possibly future grant Prop 84 funds. So we are trying for it.
Okay, I have a bunch of permitting ones when you're ready.
Okay. How much electric, there's another, some more A's in here. Okay. So how much electric power will it take to make a gallon of water? So that's a really good question. And I certainly can't answer it. I don't know if Bob or Mike can. If they can, we will. I'm keeping all the questions we can't answer, and I've got a star by it, and we will commit to getting back to you with an answer. So I don't know the answer to that.
Treatment's going to be a large part of that. We haven't really
asked. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, it is an energy-intensive treatment process, so that's why that question is being asked. It's a good question. The next, if this project is funded solely by the CSD, or if CDM Smith is still working in concert in any way with the Army Corps of Engineers, they wanted to know. This person says, I would like to know if this project is funded solely by the CSD, or if CDM Smith is still working in concert in any way with the Army Corps of Engineers. I can tell you that CDM Smith on the Army Corps of Engineers, our scope of work is completed for now. We don't have anything else right now on our portion of that. Do you want to talk about the CSD funding, Jerry or Bob?
Yes, the Army Corps funding through WERDA came to a halt when the federal government had stopped allowing line item appropriations to occur. And so it was only recently that some nominal funds got released to the Corps to help manage two of the existing contracts. But it's a fairly uncertain as far as what you get from one year to the next in federal funds, and we didn't see that happening anytime soon. So that's why we contracted directly with CDM Smith, is get it done this year. And unfortunately, the federal funds just aren't flowing the way they used to before that line item prohibition in the budgeting process hit us about 3 years ago.
Okay.
So we still have some remaining ceiling on the authorization of WERDA, but getting that appropriation each year has been the key issue and the key problem in getting quicker funds through that particular program.
Okay. Some B questions I'm going to go.
I think that's a water rights question. Probably Bob would be the best to answer that. The new point of diversion would be the 9P7 well, which is located in the center of the
I'll try to answer that as best I can. You know, this is pretty much self-contained on our property, where we have the 370-acre-foot diversion during the dry season, kind of summary terms for the San Simeon aquifer. We're keeping the piping internal to that property, so even though you're pulling out 9P7, you're putting it back into the same groundwater basin. So I don't see us going beyond that 370-acre-foot limit. as far as the amount of water that leaves the property, and it's truly a diversion from the aquifer. So it's I hope that makes sense.
Okay.
That.
Okay. Why use 370 acre feet appropriation? Oh, go ahead. You don't need.
No.
Why use 370 acre feet appropriation water right after Palmer Flat stops flowing to treat that water when you can pump it out of existing wells much cheaper? I don't know the answer. Do you?
Right. The intent of the the recharge and the treatment and pumping is to make up in those time periods when water is not available in the system, because we also, one of the other main criteria that we have to operate under is to avoid reversing the gradient from the percolation pond area back up to the existing well field. And you could certainly pump the water out of the existing CCSD wells. However, without maintaining that mound to maintain isolation both from brackish water in the downgradient part of the basin and the percolated water from the wastewater ponds, you're unable to meet that criteria because you would move that water back up towards the wells.
So you're unaware of the groundwater barrier that's out there?
All right. Thank you. Both
an average year and a slightly above average year in terms of runoff and precipitation. And then using the current conditions to essentially change the inputs to the model, because we have a lot less surface water runoff, which is our primary source of recharge, that's what's being used for evaluation of the emergency water supply.
I would like to know if the location of the injection well allows enough time to percolate and remove all possible contaminants from drinking water. Well, so all, that's a very good question. So all the water going to the injection well has already been treated, and the contaminants have already been removed. And then when it gets injected, the state requires a certain amount of travel time, 2 months is what they require in the aquifer, before you can then pull it out anywhere. And we have to prove that 2 month travel time per the state standards. Then there's the next question is, why, I would like to know why a new well has to be drilled. I thought we used existing wells. This person caught my error from the presentation that I corrected up front. We are using an existing well. I would like to know how noisy the system is and how much lighting is needed. Will the system run at night? So that is the noise question is a good question as well that we don't have answers for today, but I'm putting this in my pile to respond to later. It's a good question. And as far as how much lighting will be needed, well, so lighting is something that can be discussed as we get into the details and how lighting is done if we want to minimize lighting out there or if we want to maximize it. Those are things that we can collect, get input on, and make sure we incorporate that feedback as we go through the design. For sure. There's all kinds of lighting that can be done, and you can make it as dark as you want, or you can make it as bright as you want, or in between. And it's a good question as well, particularly with this environment. Will the system run at night? When it is running, it will likely run at night. There is a possibility, very real possibility, that it will be running at night. But I have noted the question for the noise and get back. Okay, then there's, I would like to know what are expected slash, well, this person had an initial question we already answered about costs. We'll get back to you, Bob. It's cost per acre foot. We'll have that later. I would like to know what are expected slash anticipated friction points from a scenario before water is available in use. Oh, that's a C question. We're not there yet. But I'll go ahead and answer.
Why don't you answer that? I only have one other sequence.
Okay.
For you.
Okay. So, These were all good questions. I got carried away. How long at best case scenario before water is available and in use? So we are shooting to have this up and running. Best case scenario, September. That's the answer. Best case scenario. That's best case scenario. That's best case scenario. Realistically, it will take a little longer than that. But so if this goes forward, when approximately might it begin to help us? Because of the tracer, of that two-month travel time requirement, there is a little bit of additional time in there. So we're pushing as aggressively as we can, but we do have to meet the expectations of the permitting agencies. And so those are the challenges that we have right now that we're working on with the permitting agencies. So it's the same schedule question. We are shooting for as soon as possible, of course. This is our top priority. But as we've gotten into the details with the permitting agencies and as some of the modeling results showed, we have to do this tracer study. Tracer. It's called a tracer study. And that's where we have to prove that we have a two-month travel time in the aquifer when we eject the water. So thank you.
Okay. I have a group of questions that kind of talk about loss and the quality of the water that we're going to get. So
okay.
What I'm going to call D's.
Okay.
A bunch of
D's. Okay. What percentage of the purified water is available for pumping into our normal supply? In other words, what is the loss of purified water? What they're talking about is how much total water do we have to pump out of the ground and treat, because you lose a lot of water in that process for the water that goes into the system to drink. Mike, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Okay, well, there's two components of loss, and we won't get into the treatment in any detail, but approximately 20% would be lost in the treatment process. The other loss is not really a loss, but it's not available to be retrieved at the existing well field, because one of the objectives is to maintain that separation, that gradient, between the percolation ponds and the existing CCSD well field. Because of that, if you've got a mound, you're going to have water flowing back from the injection.
150 acre feet over 6 months and 80 acre feet over 6 months for freshwater lagoons. So that's 300 gallons per minute for drinking water, and that's 100 gallons per minute for freshwater lagoons, for the freshwater to protect the riparian habitat. How does this compare to our current Cambria water usage? Bob, how does that represent your total usage? 250 acre feet over 6 months compared to, is that?
I'm trying to think of the answer to it, and I don't have it at the top of my head. I know we came up with the 250 acre feet back in, I think it was around April of 2012, when we were talking about the contingency factor on the sizing of the facility, and that's when the board direction was to come up with a facility that could provide 250 acre feet during that six-month dry season. And I have to refresh myself on my memory on that, but I know the monthly production totals can vary depending on the time of year, from anywhere from the 50 acre feet per month up to about 60 or 70 acre feet per month, depending on the time of year. So if you had just in round numbers, that's, you know, at 50 acre feet, that'd be about 5 months supply right there. Okay. That's running at 6 months. The facility could run all year if necessary and produce 500 acre feet. So
okay.
Hope that helps at least answer it the best of my capability here without having a lot of reference data in front of me.
Exactly what happens to the brine? Back to the ocean, landfill, shot to the moon. I appreciate that sense of humor. So the brine goes to the brine evaporation pond, and obviously it can't stay there forever, and it will likely get hauled off to a landfill or some sort, a place to dispose of it. It will not go back to the ocean. Right now, that's not the plan. So certainly we're not going to hire SpaceX to send it to the moon, although they would probably like that. Okay, what is the estimated, cost when did that? Has trucking in purchased water been evaluated as an immediate supplemental water source? I believe you guys are doing that.
No.
No? Okay. Okay. All right. Has a solar distillation system like the Water FX system and Fireball, forgive my pronunciation if that's incorrect, California, been evaluated as an emergency or permanent water supply? And yes, it's going to be a permanent emergency water supply, I think. Is that accurate? For emergencies?
Yeah, I think the duration of its use is going to vary by year, the type of year. There was a few sidebar conversations walking into this meeting that, you know, 6 months dry period, you know, it might be some years it's only needed for 1 month. So it's going to vary accordingly. But the thought was if you're going to invest, you know, the $4 million, you know, you should probably... your goal should be able to use it the next year or the...
Or the next drought.
Yeah, you know,
correct.
The next round. So that's at least at a staff level, and we can talk about more at a policy level, I suppose, as we move on in time here, but that's where we're at.
Okay, and I have a few that are specifically on the environment.
Okay. There's one more question here that... Let me just get this. What are the treated water losses after injection back into the aquifer? And Mike talked about the treatment part, but back into the aquifer and the losses when you inject it.
Right. The losses would would include the approximately 40% of the water would move down gradient back towards the percolation ponds where it would be recirculated from well 9 P7. And then also you could consider the approximately 100 GPM that would be used to recharge the freshwater lagoon to keep that environment viable during the dry season is really lost to the system but is used for an environmentally beneficial use.
What percentage of each water type, it's the same one that we've talked, it's another question about the percent of water used for where, so I think we've talked about that. So, all right. Will the hardness of our tap water be decreased because the new water will be treated with reverse osmosis? That is a good question, and that is something we need to look at and determine because it's certainly, depending on how we want to mimic the water and what it looks like, that's something we can do or not, just depending. I don't think we have an answer today for that because we've not gotten into that level of detail. So I'm going to put that in the unanswered question pile. I would like to know the approximate percent of brackish versus fresh. We've talked about that. I would like to know why a new supply well is being drilled and current wells are not being used. I corrected myself on that. We are using existing wells. I would like to know why water is being...
and water levels are dropping, there's going to be less discharge to that freshwater lagoon. So in order to keep that freshwater lagoon viable when the groundwater levels drop, those shallow recharge wells will be used to essentially deliver more water to that area to get back into the freshwater lagoon area to keep it ecologically viable.
The role of the Army Corps of Engineers in preparing this project for this task order, currently no role. Is this project easily made permanent? We've answered that question as well. It will be an emergency. It will, well, we're... how do you know your model isn't garbage in, garbage out? So we discussed the calibration process, and we certainly have quite a few slides and information on it. Some experts at the California Department of Public Health have looked at it, and they are in agreement that it is a scientifically solid model. How do state and federal fish and game agencies allow the CCSD to create a cone of depression in a wetland that suggests 7 to 9, that supports 7 to 9 endangered species? So we are doing the environmental process and the next steps, and I don't believe we're creating a cone of depression in a wetland.
Well, and there will be drawdown that occurs in there, both from the drought condition and also from the pumping. And that's the reason for the supplemental water that's being injected in that area, is to provide a new supply of water to make up for, one, the losses from drought-based water level declines, and also the water level declines associated with pumping in the vicinity of the percolation ponds.
Yeah, so we're not creating a cone of depression with this project. A cone of depression, there is drawdown, And we are going to keep that from happening to have negative consequences with this project. Highest treated would include tertiary treatment, shock chlorination, RO, UV ozonation, and then 6 months residence time through soil. Is that what you have? So there are various components to the treatment. I talked about the reverse osmosis. There may be pretreatment. There's going to be some post-treatment. There's going to be UV. So, yes, there are various components. 6 months residence time is not what the state requires. They require 2 month residence time. All this can be done without...
...be attenuated as you move through this port of the aquifer material.
I would like to know if you will explain how the riparian area is impacted. What does the new treatment plant do to protect riparian area? What is the exact... something to the riparian area. What is the exact...
impact, perhaps? I don't know.
It's not impact. The exact...
consequence?
It's not consequence, it's not a cue. What is the... Well, anyway. They want to know something... So, anyway, what is the exact effect to the riparian area? Okay, we'll go with effect. It's not effect, but we'll go with it. I don't want to misrepresent this person's question. So... on the riparian area, we've talked about we're going to do this well, the shallow well, to help, during a drought, provide freshwater flows to help protect the riparian habitat. That is something that happens in the drought. That is something that is happening today. And so it is a benefit of this project that we're trying to incorporate, an added benefit, right?
Right, and there is mitigation plan to deliver additional water if there are drawdowns that occur in that area such that it becomes non-viable. That's what this additional 100 GPM is intended to do, is to make up that water to keep the fresh lagoon viable.
Yeah. Okay. Has PG&E installed equipment on San Simeon Creek Road to power the emergency water supply project? I do not know if the power requirements of this project meet the power availability out at that plant, at the project site. That will be determined in the next step, so we'll get back to you. Yeah.
And there was a comment at the previous board meeting that there looked like there was quite a bit of activity out there related to PG&E and the installation of some new poles and transformers, but it wasn't associated with this project.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you. Is this project limited in scope to provide a reliable supply of water to Cambria only? As we have presented it today, yes.
Okay, I do have one. Thank you very much, and I think we could entertain some additional questions. I just wanted to point out one that I got. If you didn't hear your particular question, we were scrambling to see if we can put them in classifications. She didn't read every single comment. The one I liked is, how many Brown Act violations did the board make as they were short period? And that's what we're focused on doing. And we're going to do everything in our power to talk to whatever permitting agencies we can in order to get this project to be moved forward. So it's not only permitting agencies, but we are going to be providing additional water to this community. And I would hope that the community would get behind us and help us move forward on this project. I do have four slips for public comment. Would you, if for some reason the presenter can reply, that would be wonderful, but please keep it focused on this particular project because it's a special meeting.
To directly answer one more question that was asked,
sure.
Have any permit applications been made? No permit applications have been made. We have spoken to permitting agencies, but no applications.
It should be noted that the district has applied for an emergency coastal development permit, which is in process and should be responded to very quickly, we believe. So we have Mr. Lou Blanc, followed by Tina Dickinson.
Is that up here, Mr. President?
Sure, wherever you'd like to go.
I just figured you didn't like seeing my sign on camera.
I don't care. Okay. Carry it with you everywhere you go.
First, I was curious, and maybe I was a little late, Could I get the professional qualifications of the two of you from CDM Smith?
So we have a team of people working on this. I'm the principal in charge, and I am an engineer. I am a licensed professional engineer, not in California. Mike Smith is a licensed professional geologist in California. Our project manager on this, Sava Nedek, who many of you have seen at many public meetings, he is a licensed professional engineer, and we have numerous licensed professional engineers and professional geologists, all licensed in California, working beneath all of them. Probably in total, on this first task order, we probably have more than 10 just on this one first task order that all have licenses in California.
Before you leave, what's the cost of the brine disposal?
We're running out of time.
From the evaporation pond?
We addressed the cost question. We're getting into that in detail for specific things on the brine disposal.
Okay. Thank you. And the just for Mr. Gresson's information, even though I've said it up here, the State Water Resource Control Board has had excess grant money available for...
If you want to apply, we'll see if we can finish this up here.
And also the water rights point of diversion is from the specific wellhead, not from the CCSD property. So if you're going to go to a different well from the ones we're using now, you're not complying with the State Water Resource Control Board water rights that we have. So you're going to have to get that modified if you're trying to do that. Okay? And also this concept of having to have a mound of wastewater to keep seawater from intruding. There's a groundwater barrier that goes under Highway 1. It's called the Cambria Fault. That is a barrier there just as much as it's a barrier between Santa Rosa 4 and Santa Rosa 1 and 3. That's why they're at different elevations where the water is in those wells. It's the same fault. It creates the same groundwater barrier. All you have to do to keep any kind of seawater from intruding is to pump a small amount of your wastewater or even your brine water at that groundwater barrier, and then you don't need the mound anymore. So you can eliminate the need for the mound, and all of that water could be used for repurification. All you have to do is understand the geology that's out there to be able to make this system much more efficient. That's all I have.
Good, thank you. Bob, would you like to address that one issue?
Well, certainly. I believe that's state revolving loan fund money. Mm-hmm. We'll certainly look further for actual grant money where you have a participating state share and a local share. Thank you.
And we are pursuing a plethora of resources. Yes, it's
Okay, Tina Dickinson, Cambria. My question regarding whether this emergency unit, this reverse osmosis unit, was to be used. There's something beeping there.
No, I just started again.
Okay, that it was my question was it to be used for only Cambria and not any other community? The answer that I got from you, Margie, was, or to the community, as it relates today. What does that mean? I'd like to have that expanded upon, and if I'll expand on it, maybe for you, forward. Given his previous service with the CCSD and knowledge of the legal issues, he would certainly be a valuable asset and has indicated he's happy to participate on a volunteer basis. Let me know how you'd like to proceed. Thanks, Bruce. I would like to know what this project really means to this community. I don't want to know about expansion to other communities, so we need the truth today, not as it just relates today, but for the future. The other thing is the cost. We have no idea. $4 million for the project itself. What are the costs long term? What are each one of us going to have to pay for this particular project in our bi-monthly bills? Nothing has been projected to us. What about maintenance costs, technical costs? Will the CCSD staff be trained for the operation? Mr. Gresham said this could be actually provide us with 500 acre feet. So what does that mean? Does that mean Cambria is going to grow based on this model? Because if that's the case, I think that's a serious issue for the community. I've talked to people this week from LA, from all over. They said the reason we don't go to Carmel anymore is because we love this town because it hasn't become a Carmel. So think about it, folks. Just think about this little 250-acre-foot portable reverse osmosis unit and what that can actually become. I have tons more I could say, but those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, and let me comment on that old email that you have. Yes, we did have some discussions with various people, and they didn't have interest at the time. This is laser-focused on Cambrians and Cambrians only, and we have a director that's focused on that, and we're focusing exactly on this particular project.
Okay.
Period.
Then when period. I read this, I don't know that. Okay? It's good for the community to have that clarified. Thank you.
My number's in the book. Call me anytime.
President Berger, may I comment on,
yes.
On one other thing, too? And in all fairness to CDM, so we completed the task one, and we're asking the board to complete and fund task two. They've started phase one, and as that's completed, I think that we're going to be absolutely transparent and provide that information to the community. This is a phased process. We've completed the modeling, and as the agenda indicates, that's what we're discussing today. And when we get more information as in regards to the permitting and the pre-construction, then we'll.
Is it? Let's get her done.
There you go. Thank you, Art. And we'll follow by Mahala.
Mahala Burton. So this started out because we had a drought and an emergency. And now, suddenly, it seems like this is no longer an emergency project. It's $4 million, and where is that $4 million coming from? Wouldn't we have to borrow that and go through a process? And that takes time. So what I'm concerned about is we are still facing surcharges. We're hauling water. We're doing without guests and everything. So what are we going to do for the residents for the emergency? Because what you've done is, and I hate to say this because it does sound nefarious and dubious, you're bypassing emergency, using emergency procedures to bypass the environmental safeguards for a permanent facility. Is this no longer a truck that you're bringing in with a portable facility? Are you putting something in the ground? That's a question. Is it going to be built in a permanent facility?
Good question. Anything else? Well, I'll answer.
That's very, very important.
I do believe that CDM Smith is putting the pipes above ground. We're having a modular unit.
Portable, built-in. Okay, we can get to that later. This is for CDM Smith. Excuse me. On the chemicals and the brine. Brine is one thing, but within the brine, there are a lot of other chemicals, very, very nasty chemicals, and the backwash. When you're spreading this onto the ground right next to Van Gordon Creek, you will be contaminating Van Gordon Creek and the aquifer. So what is the plan?
Please do answer that one because it's an important one.
So there is a very rigorous separate permit to protect. We have to line that pond. We have to go through the Regional Water Quality Control Board. It's called a Title 27 permit. You have to put in monitoring wells all around it to make sure that nothing escapes out of that pond. So that nothing is impacted. So thank you I hope that answers the question. So,
and may I add just
one? Please add.
The next task order is going to be the environmental, including permitting, so we're not bypassing the environment. The county issuance of an emergency coastal development permit allows certain things to happen concurrently.
Okay.
So they can issue the permit, but they also expect you to complete the CEQA process. It's just they do allow you to move forward with certain elements and do CEQA in parallel with those with that process. So it's slightly different from a traditional approach.
Okay, we'll close public comment except for 1186 Hartford, Mary Webb.
You outed me, so now everybody can Everybody can go look at our 2,500 gallon water tank.
Well, you know where I live.
We just spent $3,000 on. So the permanent facility, it was listed in the CDM Smith report, will cost about $51 million. If you go with this pilot project now and it turns into a permanent facility, and the cost of the water per acre feet for that will be at least $5,200 an acre foot or possibly more. At least that's alternative number 5, San Simeon Creek Road, brackish water, 256 acre feet for 6 months.
$15.3 million, as I recall.
Future cost of the project in total is $51,145,342. The implementation cost is $15 million, but that does not include annual O&M at $400,000 a year, the EUAC at $1,000,003. That's alternative number 5. The cost of water per acre feet for the permanent project is $5,252.43 an acre foot. So the temporary project that you're doing, there's no analysis of what the cost is for O&M, what the cost is, and what type of employees we need to have to operate something like that, how difficult it is. It won't be in until September 1st. We could have an El Nino this year, so at that point, then we may have flooding rather than drought and no place to store the water. We'll just be going out to sea, which is great for steelhead, and I'm glad the deer might finally get some water, but we should actually be storing some of that water that's going out to sea. And then we've spent $4 million for this temporary project with the pipelines laying above ground, and then we have the free water. As long as we have rain, we're not going to be using this temporary system. Employees don't know how to do it anymore. You've got to replace all the membranes. All those prices really go up, and none of that has been analyzed. So now I'm really worried that I think we probably do have 370 acre feet in the aquifer, maybe. If everybody's really, really, really careful, we might make it through the dry season. But we've got to stop the tourism. We need to stop Pine Dorado. We've got to stop these events. The hotels need to not be renting out as many rooms as they're renting out right now so that we can make it through this 6 months period of time and then see where we are. Otherwise, the residents then are eating it. We're all paying, like we just paid $3,000 for our tank now sitting in our driveway. We're all going to have to do that while tourism is going on business as usual.
Thank you for your comment. Let me mention we did look into... right now, the trucking water is $9,000 an acre foot.
We didn't have to wear roads for trucking water. We have no money for road maintenance. You can
right.
Look at San Luis Obispo County and you haul all this heavy water all over our roads, then we're all on the hook for that, too.
Right, so $9,000 an acre foot is a little bit expensive, so that's one thing we didn't want to pursue right away. There you go. Let's get it up. Let's get it going. It's not off the table. Never has been off the table. But for this project, in order for us to have water by September, I'm sorry, this is the... Anyway, thank you. Is there any other business?
I didn't write my questions down, but okay. I sure have
Please
a few
have.
That I would like to have addressed.
Go for it.
First thing I want to say is this. I'm not against us having water. My understanding was we were pursuing a stopgap emergency that would carry us through to the rainy season and possibly even be a temporary, we're in an emergency, we're going to be out of water, not a accelerated schedule of a project that we already had kind of on the table. And again, I'm not necessarily against pursuing something that's a more permanent alternative in a drought year. But I'm quite concerned when I hear September and that's optimistic. I'm quite concerned that regardless of whether or not we know how much water we could pull before it rains,
I'm really concerned if we don't have a back and we're not doing. This is an important thing, but it seems to me after this presentation, and I had a feeling before this, this is kind of where it was heading. But I don't feel like I have no confidence that we're going to not run out of water and that we have no backup plan, because especially now that we know that it's going to be September, possibly longer. Here's the other things that I really would like to know. This was what I wrote down at the beginning. Why are we building such a complex project when we're in a ridiculously drastic situation with our water? With all the long-range looking back at the situation, all the long-range looking forward at the situation, we need it now. We don't need it based on all these other things. I mean, we want to have an environmentally sensitive whatever it is for our backup plan, but we need to have something. And I don't feel confident right now that we're taking actions that will make sure that we are not going to be in a situation where we're going to have to ask the businesses to stop renting out rooms, where we're going to have to tell people, oh, if you have a second home, you better stay in your first home because you can't come here and use water because we're going to run out of water for the people who live here and don't have a place to go. Question on the project. This is a question I don't know if you can answer completely off of that other topic, which is, and I am all for protecting the riparian habitat. In a drought, why are we not allowing the habitat to experience the natural fluctuations of drought and dry and wet that it would have whether we were here or not? It seems to me that doesn't really speak to, I mean, if we're trying to do what we can to lower the impact of our existence here, making a lagoon wet in a dry year, maybe there actually is an advantage for the lagoon, for the fish, for the animals, for the plants. I don't know. That's not my specialty. But maybe there is an advantage in a dry year for those things, like maybe things that get overrun die off and things like that. I mean, it seems to me in a drought year, recharging so the lagoon has plenty of water seems like a good idea on the surface, but I'd really like to know whether that actually is a good idea, because it could possibly be something that there's all kinds of unintended impacts. To the Planning Commission meeting, and she said she hadn't talked to you guys in a couple weeks. She asked if we still had an emergency. That's not good. That's bad. That's really bad. We need these folks on our side. I want names and dates. Who are you talking to? Who's your contact? Who are you talking to at the Coastal Commission? Who are you talking to at RWCD? I need to know, because if I don't know, I don't have confidence we're going to get something accomplished. I'm really worried about it. Fortunately, we're having a meeting tomorrow that I don't even know if we initiated it or if it was initiated by the Office of Emergency Services, that hopefully maybe they have something in a package they could bring out. I mean, this is not a good situation, and I feel good that we're doing something for the long term. This is not going to give us water for this drought. And that's really what we need to be doing. I had hopes that it would. And I know that President Beringer still has hopes that it will. But I'm genuinely concerned, and without any backup plan, I don't like heights. Without a net, it's not good. That's all I have to say for right now. Thank you. Thank you.
Any other director have a comment? Mr.
Thompson. Yeah, just a few comments, and I share Director Rice's need to probably move forward with a little bit more urgency, and especially in terms of dealing with the regulatory agencies and so forth. A lot has been said about funding, and I'm hopeful that as part of this next process, we will be able to identify some other options beyond coming out of our pocketbooks. I know that certainly low-interest loans from the state might be one option. Grants. There are probably a dozen companies that provide this sort of technology, and perhaps some sort of demonstration project in partnership with a company would work. My part-time neighbor here is an agriculture person in the Central Valley. They've had a system, a reverse osmosis system, in operation for the last 6 months. That was produced by an Israeli company. And he indicated to me that that his unit was turning out 2 acre-feet a day at an energy cost of, and I believe he said something like $65 an acre-foot. I had hoped I had passed this along to CDM Smith, and I hope as quickly as possible.
Director Robinette.
Thank you. and I certainly agree with the comments and the observations of other board members here. And I want to thank everyone for your questions. They were great questions. And that's what we needed, was for everyone to have the opportunity to ask and to find out as much as we can all find out here today. Some things will be followed up on. I certainly, as a resident here, as a member of the community, I have much concern about where we are. I don't think anyone is real comfortable where we are. But I would say it's hard because the risks are always about possibilities and probabilities, and they're not guarantees either side of the coin. There is no guarantee that we're going to have a big El Nino. There's a possibility. We'll know when we know. There is also the possibility that we won't. And if we don't, I think that this community is at a place where we don't want to do this again. I think that if we are going to do what we're doing, invest our money the way we're proceeding, then we want something that when this ever happens again as an emergency, not as growth-inducing, but as an emergency, that we can rest better knowing we're okay. We've got it covered now. Anytime you take off on a new journey, there are going to be twists and turns of the unexpected. That happens. We're in the middle of it. We're all hoping, really, that we can turn this on in July. But we can look at why or why not. We need to continue to go forward. We need to be working on loans or some kind of financial support right now. We need to hear from our consultants that we're working with. Can all of us help on permitting? Should we be going to meetings to support getting our permits approved as fast as we can? Because we're in the stage now of permits, and we all know that permits can really slow things down. But we are in an emergency. We are living in California. You would think that the government and the governor would be fast-tracking we people in communities like some kind of reservoir, like some kind of storage. Of course we do. But right now, we're dealing with that's not our option. We don't have the time left to do such a thing today. That's it.
Thank you. Director Cliff?
Yes, I'm concerned that we started out with a kind of a commitment for a July 1 functioning date, and then we were into August. Now we're into September. My specific question to the consultants is it because of work you're doing, or is it because of other agencies that you have that are taking up time? And if it is, we need to know who those people are, and we need to apply some pressure to these people. I have no problem in calling out by name people who are going to be obstructionists in this process. I don't have a bit of a problem with that. To Ms. Dickerson's question, this is a Cambria project, and if other people want to attach to it and things like that, no way. We got to just keep this on one thing, one focus, and get it done. Now, the Office of Emergency Service from the governor will be here tomorrow, was specifically asked. What can you do to shorten the time to get this thing done? If you can't do anything, then we bought you coffee and cookies and leave town, because we don't, and we need to then say to our newspaper and whatever it is, these people are obstructionists to getting water here. And it's time now to say we have an emergency. We have to act like we have an emergency. We have to call out those people who are blocking it and get the specific thing done for this particular emergency. And it's not a permanent project. It's to get us through where we're at right now. And it could continue on. If we expected rain to come November 22nd of this year, it didn't come. And I hope there's an El Nino thing. If they want to show off and come down here and for their emergency service people and look like they're very interested in us, then by God, they ought to do something. And I think we need to tell them, I won't use the word, but get off the pot and help us out if you're going to help us out. If not, get out of our way. Because the real reality right now is that if we keep moving this thing along, we are looking at stainless steel trucks sitting out here with people coming down and getting their water from a bottle, and we'll look like a third world a country. And we don't need to be that, and we don't need to do that. And it's time to push it forward and push it forward hard. And that's and again. Very specific. This is for Cambria and Cambria's problem and Cambria's problem only. And we're going to be very specific about allowing anyone else to say we got to regionalize this and we got to have a joint powers and we got to do all kinds of things, because all that will do is delay. And we don't have time to do that.
Well, I hope you get aggressive, Mr. Director Rice.
First thing to respond, I'm also ready to bake cookies for anybody, because it's you don't always get what you need when you push that way. You can push other ways. And then with five of us, I hope the general manager and engineer are hearing that would like to do whatever we can to help with the permitting process. Please take advantage of the fact that we're trying to be helpful with that. That maybe sometimes an elected official is a good person to have go speak to these folks. And the other comment I wanted to make is I'm at the RAC meeting, the Water Resources Advisory Committee for the SLO County. They gave us a short presentation on the earworm that Bob was talking about, the integrated regional water management plans. Grants that the state is fast-tracking, and one of the qualifications for projects that really, really stood out for me, besides, you know, the normal shovel-ready, was that the cost-benefit analysis doesn't necessarily pencil out. They don't want to fund something that actually is essentially affordable for a community. They want to fund things that are essentially, because of whatever drought emergency is going on, you can't really pick up the cost of, but because you need water. I want to know names and dates. Who have we talked to? When did we talk to them? What was the result? Are we going to talk to them again? Do we need to follow up? I need to know these things, because without that, I don't feel confidence. This general kind of answers are very troubling.
Thank you. I agree too. It is called accountability. Who's doing what? Who's contacting? Who's staying with it? And I did want to say too, Bob does wear a lot of hats, and as does Jerry, as does Monique, as does everyone there. But Bob, I don't know if I do understand correctly, you were working very hard on pursuing a particular grant to apply to this. And I think it's important that everyone here knows why it was that we did not. It was an interesting
I think you're
response.
Referring, sure. If you want me to reply, sure.
Sure.
Yes.
I think you're referring to the Prop 50 application. It was a final round on Prop 50, which dealt specifically with like desalination type projects. We made a run at that. and we did not get awarded. Some of the reasons cited by the state person I spoke with was the temporary nature of the project, and that they didn't want to fund something that was temporary in nature, in so many words. I mean, it was a very competitive process. Now, I have been communicating on and off with the county staff, county public works staff. We try to go to many of the RAC meetings each month, and they do a pretty good job of keeping us up to date. The Prop 84 is the next outside grant fund that I see, unless there's something with this OES meeting that I'm not aware of. The state did come up with some funding for drought relief, and some of those rules are still unfolding, but Prop 84 is one of the better ones that I'm aware of. That's, I think, a 75% state and then 25% local fund. I know Jerry, and we've been talking with Tracy Fuller, our new finance manager, about other approaches as well. So we've got quite a discussion going on in-house on how to get some funding lined up.
Okay, thank you. Because I think all of us really do want to do the same thing here on this board. And if we need a louder voice to be noticed that, oh, yes, by the way, we have a finite amount of water, and we know it here, and we're trying to address it and send it further, we're here to help in that way.
Thank you. Mr. Cliff, one last comment?
Yeah. The starting point on all of this is the emergency development permit from the county. Where are we on that?
We are in the middle of completing that. Now that we have task order 2 in place with CDM Smith, they're going to assist me. We had a meeting on April 1st with Nancy Orton, Aaron Singweld, and Tim Tomlinson of Public Works. With getting that information, CDM Smith had their key permitting people on the phone, the conference phone at that time. So we got a lot of good information on that. We've got the forms pretty much ready to go, and I'm going to be working with CDM Smith hopefully tomorrow to finish it off.
So are you telling me that on April 1st we'll have an emergency development permit from the county?
No, that was a pre-app meeting that we had with them. Pre-application meeting.
April. When should we get a permit? Mm-hmm.
Well, that'll be process with the county, and I'm thinking you'll probably have about their fastest turnaround. I can't speak for the county, to be honest with you.
But we can.
I will say this though, the critical path is going to be going through the CDPH permitting process on this. But we're doing as many things in parallel as possible, and I get a lot of questions. Where's the CDP application at? We've been focusing a lot on more of the critical path items, which is getting CDM going on the environmental and the CDPH permitting and so forth. And this is in parallel, and we're pushing this as hard as we can, too.
Yeah, I'm going to answer my question. Have we even submitted an application for the permit?
Not to date, no.
That bothers me, because that's kind of an indication that we don't have a problem. That also is a situation if let's say I'm meeting with a county supervisor and they're saying, well, you haven't submitted a permit. We can't even do anything. We have got to make some tough decisions, make them right now, and do them. And at least that's from my position. I don't know about how the rest of the board feels, but so what? I think in that initial meeting was just do it as a descriptive thing.
Right. Yes. Right. And that's the feedback I got, that they're willing to help us if we just put the darn application in. Let me ask just one question of CDM Smith. If you had all of the permits in your pocket, money in the bank, how quickly could you put a site up?
Well, we have something up in the summer for sure.
No, 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 no. See, when you say summer or fall, it's like a generality. I've been speaking and I've been focusing on July 1st.
That's all permits in hand, we have it running in July.
In what date in July?
Middle to end of July.
Okay, how about the 15th?
Okay,
the 15th. So if we have focused all of our efforts and you had all the permits in your pocket, then we could get it done in 8 weeks, 9 weeks. Okay. That given, now if now what we have to do is focus on getting those permits. So, and if we haven't had a complete permit application, hopefully we can complete that tomorrow. If we can't complete that, I'm talking for an emergency coastal development permit that the county has said they're willing to expedite right now for us. They just need us to fill out the paperwork. So if we don't have all the T's, like they're saying, if you don't have all the T's crossed or the I's dotted, that's okay. Give us something to move forward with. And then on Monday we can call them and see how they're doing if we have to cross another T. And I know they're also, I'm not so naive to think that you cannot push those agents. You can't, because your professional, your licenses are online. You've got to go by the book. You've got to do it, and you have relationships that you have to build and maintain for years to come. You don't care about it. Well, you care about us, but we need to say that we are in an emergency. We need something July 1st. Okay, fine, 15th. Did I hear 15th? But when you say summer or fall or September, September is a non-starter.
Mr. President, may
I want to.
Pardon me? No. Okay. Yeah, tell me.
Mr. President, may I speak to? I just want to say something in hand. So it's going to go fast. It'll be in there by the end of next week at the latest.
How about the middle of next week? Let's
shoot for the middle.
Okay,
Can I just ask this?
Sure.
Do we have a checklist where it lists every permit that we are going to be required to submit? Do we have a checklist? And if we have the checklist, do we have an actual person accountable for getting that permit then completed? And do we have a file date?
I think we do, yeah.
Well, again, we have an expert with CDM Smith in our Sacramento office that I'll let Mari speak of.
Permits? I'm sorry, Bob, don't mean to interrupt, but who is accountable and responsible for filling out which permits and how many permits are there, and so that we kind of actually have it all pinned down and we actually have a deadline of when each of those permits are submitted?
Yes, CDM Smith does have an expert on their staff that's going to be in this recently.
They're going to fill them out?
Scope of work, yes.
I'm sorry, Mari, would you like to respond with the mic? So it is CDM Smith that's responsible?
Correct. We are filling out the paperwork. We have identified all the permits. It is more than just the emergency permit with the county. There's other permits, and there's rigorous requirements, and that's why we've already been meeting with CDPH, so we can make sure when we turn in all of the paperwork, it's done exactly to their expectations, so it goes through as quickly as possible. So that is, as to a filing date for everything, we can't give. On some things, we can do filing dates, and for those, we have filing dates. But for certain permits, we don't have a filing date because it is largely dependent on the permitting agency to tell us, yes, you're ready to file. So, it is, and yes, we want your help. We absolutely want the district and the community engaged in helping us with this, because for the very reasons the board member you just brought up about, you know, we're so concerned. I loved it when you said, when do we get why are we protecting the species in the drought? What about us? You know, that's what I keep having to remind these permitting agencies through all of this process is, you know, we have an emergency. We need to figure this out. We need to move as quickly as possible. I've asked specific questions of them. How long will it take to get, you know, CDPH? How long will it take to get this permit? And the response was, that's a good question. I mean, so right.
And so when they say that, I think you're getting a feeling of this board,
mm-hmm.
that if they're not as naive to know that you can't push.
Mm-hmm. But we know we need your help. We absolutely, yes, we agree.
May I ask this, Mari? In your experience and in your opinion, and going through many other permitting processes in your career, do you feel that we're that Camry is being given any special consideration given the fact that we could possibly run out of water, or are you being put right in the line with everybody else and they can't tell you when they can even get back to you and get it done?
There is special consideration being given to the district, for sure. However, it's not to the level that you would like to see. So in their minds, in the permitting agency's mind, relative to how they do it, they feel like they are giving due diligence and consideration to Cambria.
Please let us know. Give us names, give us numbers.
My feeling is, okay, but we're not taking advantage of that special consideration. We're dicking around here with maybe we'll have it next week. I've heard this since that meeting April 1st that I was in which Nancy Orton said, just get me the paperwork.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Put it in tomorrow. If it's not complete, the county will come back and tell us it needs more information. You can be keeping a copy on your desk to be working on for all of next week. Put it in tomorrow, incomplete, and say, look, I'm still working on it. I'll have a complete one to you by the end of next week. At least then they're starting the process. I mean, when I was on the North Coast Advisory Council, there was a ton of times when the county would say, oh, it's not a complete application. It doesn't have everything in it yet. Well, let's do it. Let's make sure that we at least make contact with the county tomorrow with Nancy and say, hey, it's coming. She doesn't even know if it's coming. Well, she doesn't know if you're working on it. Right. When I talked to her, she didn't even know.
We understand. It's top priority.
Top priority.
Understand.
Okay, thank you. Yes. And so with that, I do have a slip, but we have to close public comment. So before I gavel this meeting to... unless the general manager has something, Mr. McKinnon can kind of shout out, and we'll gavel this to a close.
But Jerry always.
Jerry's got one last minute thing that's important.
Okay, that's all I need. I'm a very simplistic person, and when I solve problems, sometimes I solve problems backwards. So let's start with July. How long will it take to lay the pipe from the plant to the well and the intake pipes from the brackish to the, get a timeline on that. How long will it take to hook up the plant to the electric? You're working to get it done in that particular point by that particular time. All I hear now is just squeaky wheels.
That's right.
And we're putting grease on the wheels. Let's take the grease off the track and get it moving. Thank you,
Mr. McKinnon. And I sympathize with you. I know that San Simeon had a completed plant. And they had to wait an additional year to get that thing turned on. But at least they had the plant. And I think that if we need power for this unit, we should have PG&E working on power for this unit. It's not, are we going to proceed with this project? I don't think that there's a person on this board that isn't wanting this project to be done on July 15th. And there's an incentive to get it there. And we can provide an incentive for us to get it there. But with that said, I'm adjourning this special meeting, I guess.